Hello and welcome back to another edition of Inside Network Marketing. This is May 4th, 2009. This is your host, Glenn Clements. I'm the CEO and founder of MarketWave Incorporated. I apologize for the delay. I know it's been a few weeks since I've done one of these podcasts. I actually have at least a decent explanation, if not an excuse. First of all, I had a major computer crash, lost my computer for about 10 days, and I'm on a Mac, and I tell you, that's tough to do. You can crash a Windows system and screw it up by essentially loading and installing Windows. On a Macintosh, it's a little tougher to do. So if any of you got Macs out there, there's a system folder in the root directory. Inside that, there's something called a library folder. Don't mess with anything inside that folder. I mean, don't even open that folder. Okay, don't even open the system folder and look at that library folder. Right, because I used to teach Mac, so I thought I was this big expert. I'd go in there and muck around with it. Ended up sabotaging my own computer so it wouldn't boot for 10 days. Also, I do a lot of expert witness testimony, and I do consulting with startups and things like that. And it just seems like for the last couple of months, just everybody wants to start a network marketing company again. We go through phases like this every once in a while. We kind of get this run on people that just they don't want to be distributors anymore. They want to start their own company. So I guess it's good for us startup consultants, keeps us busy. But there are so many, and there are so many that for some reason want to launch in Utah, of course, because it's a very MLM friendly state. But it's interesting in that I have one consulting client where there's the four founders, none of them live in Utah, but they're all basing the company in Utah and moving to Utah just because it's a great place to run a network marketing company. And I was actually up there a few weeks ago doing some work with them, and when they were in there setting up their office, it was kind of funny. It's right across the parking lot from another major network marketing company, and these guys were still all top distributors for another company. They were leaving, so they didn't want anybody to know they were doing this. So everybody's kind of like peeking around the corners and kind of hiding, making sure when they get out the parking lot, they run to the car so no one can spot like who they are. And while they're in there, another group of top leaders from another network marketing company that nobody knows, I think, is leaving, or suddenly walk in and they're like setting up their office for their new company they're starting. So they sort of like hid from each other and kind of dodged everybody. It's just funny how the little game is played. But I've got a few of those irons in the fire. Just launched a company a couple of months ago. Got another one launching in a couple of months. So interesting stuff out there. They're all going to, of course, get discovered way before they launch. It's just the MLM grapevine is an amazing thing that way. I want to get into the news and not waste a lot of time, but since more than one of you have said you like my anecdotes, I'll go ahead and give you one. Several years ago, and this would have been, I think, mid-90s, me and three of my partners that I had at the time that were in a company called Beverly Hills International, which was based in Indianapolis, Indiana, that should have been the first red flag, we decided to leave that company and chop around to find someplace else to move. A lot of it had to do with my working out of the home office of BHI and discovering that the owner and the CEO of the company was not only not the most ethical guy, but I think he was a member of the Czechoslovakian mafia. That's a long story. That's not my anecdote. Anyway, so we're looking around for another company to join, and we said, this time we're gonna really get to know the owners before we join the company, because this guy, he sounded like such a great, honest guy. His vice president, I think it was, a guy by the name of Dave Philpott. I'll go and mention Dave because Dave was kind of the conscience of the company. Dave was really a good guy. In fact, I heard a story after we left that Dave went to work one day, sitting in his office, and just sort of sat there for a second, according to people that were in the office, and all of a sudden he just got up, put his coat back on, and walked right back out the door, and they never saw him since. I guess so he had a lucid moment, realized, I got to get out of here too. No, Dave was a good guy. But anyway, the rest of the other guys weren't so hot. So we're looking around for another company. He said, this time we're going to really get to know the owners. And one of the companies that we were considering, of several, was Life Plus out of Batesville, Arkansas. And so I said, we're going to go to Batesville. We're going to fly out there. We're going to take the top two or three guys in corporate. We're going to take them out. And this is more my friend Corey Augenstein's idea, who does the MLM Insider website. He said, let's get them drunk. Let's really see them with their guard down, really see who they are this time before we join the company. So we thought, okay, we'll do that. And so we actually flew all the way to Batesville, Arkansas. They picked us up. They showed us their office and everything. We were, it was impressive. And so then we take them out that night, and we're going to feed them a bunch of beers and see these guys what they're really like, right? Not just their veneer of the, fleshy office and they're whining and dining us. And as soon as we get there, we discover that Batesville, Arkansas is a dry county. They don't serve alcohol in Batesville, Arkansas. So we plied them with coffee and tea and Dr. Pepper. So anyway, that didn't work, but interesting thing, though, is that we ended up leaving and not going with Life Plus. Nothing wrong with the company. Ended up, as most people know, I went with Longevity Network. That's where I had most of my success with for about 10 years until 2003, which is when I left them and decided to lose my mind and start my own company, which is no longer around. You know, the first thing that we heard, and this couldn't have been more than 24 hours after we got back from Batesville and visiting the Life Plus office, the president of the company calls us up and goes, "Len, you guys have got to write something to say that you haven't joined our company yet." And I said, "Why is that?" "Well, because we're getting deluged with these calls from people going, why did you put these guys frontline to the company and make some kind of special deal with them?" And people just assumed that because apparently we got spotted out there. You know, I guess people recognized us, and it immediately went through the grapevine. Less than a day later, it's all over the place. Like, people calling everybody upline from them going, "Are they in your downline?" "Nope, they're not. They're not in my downline. Are they in yours?" "Nope. Hey, you know what? Let's call Joe. He's a few levels up from us." And eventually, they went all the way up to the master distributor, the guy at the top of the whole hierarchy. Forget his name, but they called him up. He goes, "No, they're not in my downline either." "Oh, there's dirty, rotten so-and-so's. That company must have made him a frontline deal. You know, put them out." You know, and so they call on us up to tell us, like, "Could you guys just explain to people that you're not in anybody's downline because you haven't signed up yet?" So it's the MLM grapevine is an amazing thing. Not so much in its accuracy, but at least in its speed. I've always said there are no secrets in this industry. Whatever you say that you want to try to keep a secret or don't tell anybody, it's the world's biggest grapevine. It's a ready-made conduit. You know, all the paths of information are already laid out before you. You know, the entire circuitry is already there in place. So, yeah, information moves through it very, very quick. It's hard to keep a secret in this business. But, anyway, let's get to the news. The first thing I want to comment on is kind of a follow-up about the Donald Trump going MLM concept. I've had some interesting conversations with a couple of corporate people there at Ideal Health, which will soon to be the Trump Network, and they were very candid with me and answered a lot of the questions that I had. There's just a couple of comments that I want to make, and I especially with companies that are so good to me and they are so responsive and they answer all my questions, which is kind of unusual, as you'll see a little bit later on in this podcast. Now, with these guys, I mean, they're totally up front, got right back to me. I actually got on the phone with the CEO of the company. Like I said last time, I think this is a great thing for the industry. I think somebody like Donald Trump, whose name and his brand is so important to him, that obviously he's not going to risk it in an industry that might taint it in some way. So I think the fact that him and his people have done a lot of due diligence and decided to get involved in this industry is a plus for all of us, and we should at least some of us out there stop trying to dismiss this or out of jealousy or whatever and bash these guys because they got Donald Trump like it's not that big a deal. It is that big a deal, right? It's really great that somebody like Donald Trump, who cares that much about his image, would lend his name to this industry and not just as a paid endorser. This is something, I think, for a bunch of legal reasons that they have to remain ambiguous about it, but Donald Trump is more than a paid endorser for Ideal Health. So it's not like the situation with the ACN deal or something like that where they just hired him. It's called the Trump Network, for crying out loud. That's what's going to be called in October. It is, for all intents and purposes, Ideal Health. It's just going to change its name to the Trump Network. It's going to be the same product line, and they may add new products and stuff, but same compensation plan. So people are saying it's like this is this ground floor launch of this new company by Donald Trump, and it isn't. It's a fairly well-known company. It's been around for a while, called Ideal Health. It's changing its name to the Trump Network. They are going to be using a very width-oriented, unilevel compensation plan. So I think a lot of people are going to dive into this thing expecting to get a lot of spillover. But it's not a binary, it's not a matrix. It's not only is it a unilevel that behooves width, everybody across your front line, but the qualifications in the plan behoove you. There's a lot of economic incentives there to put as many people as you can across your front line. So I think a lot of people are going to get kind of disappointed. There's going to be a lot of what I call these 49ers, you know, the sort of gold rush mentality where they're all going to dive in. They're going to look around going, "Hey, where's my free downline I should have got? It's not going to be there." And you might see a lot of attrition soon after. And then the ones that are really in there for the right reason are the ones that are going to stick. I think that happens with pretty much every startup. It might be kind of magnified a little bit in this particular situation. Really, the only other criticism I have, and this really isn't so much Ideal Health as it is the way some of the leaders in the field are promoting it. And this is this issue, and it's kind of a side thing. It's more just a peeve of mine, but they're using this thing that the soil has 50% less nutrients in it today than in the past, thus the need for supplementation. Remember, this is the company that has the, you send them a $100 urine sample test, and they customize vitamins for you, which actually they have 48 different formulations, and they pick the one that's closest to what you need, which I I think technically still is customization. So anyway, it's the 50% less nutrient thing, that's only, as I Google that, it's always attributed to somebody in Ideal Health, and then it's always attributed to Health Canada. So something, somebody somewhere in Health Canada apparently made this. Now, just so you know, the whole thing about soil depletion, like there's so supposed to be some a Senate subcommittee hearing or something many years ago that said that here in the United States, that's all a myth. I think I've dealt that with in a previous podcast. Not only that, but the FTC, I believe it is, has considered that to be a deceptive trade practice because it's not true. And of course, if you look at it logically, obviously it's not true. This soil has been on this earth for billions of years. And I mean, did we just deplete all the nutrients from it, you know, in the last like 40 or 50 years out of billions of years of far more plant life, animal life on top of it than probably there is today? So anyway, I actually contacted Health Canada. I'll get to the point here. The guy who was actually the doctor who was in charge of the department that would have done this type of study even said he was going to get back to me. It wasn't just an immediate response or a canned response. Several days later, he got back to me and actually tried to research this and came back and said, and I'm quoting, Health Canada is not aware of any report by the department on this subject. In fact, it would be extremely difficult to compare nutrient values over time in specific foods as the nutrients in individual samples of fresh produce vary greatly from sample to sample. Many factors need to be looked at when comparing nutrient values, such as the different species of the produce, growing conditions, weather conditions, location where the produce is grown, as well as farming practices. These factors can all affect the nutrient levels in food. And he goes on to say that no, this comment that we keep seeing that due to overplanting, soil depletion, and widespread use of chemical fertilizers and pesticides, the produce that is commercially grown today in the U.S. and Canada contains 75% less nutrition than it did in the 1950s. I think I said 50% before, but no, it's 1950s. It was 75% less nutrition. None of that is true. Health Canada checked it out themselves, and they said, no, we never said that. So if anybody out there is saying that, stop saying it. No really update on Zri or any of that kind of stuff. Of course, that's still tied up in court now, so neither side's talking. But I did want to make a comment about Life Vantage. Now, Life Vantage is one, I think it's sort of suffering a guilt by association here. They're kind of getting some shrapnel. This is where some of the top corporate people and the top leaders all move to, and I ranted on them and why I didn't really believe their motives for moving were as they said they were in the last podcast. You can listen to it there. But one of the concerns that I have, which is kind of a new concern, which really has nothing to do with the Zri issue and the coup and the move and all that kind of stuff, but it has to do with the way that they're marketing their Pro-Tandem product. Now, this is it's an actual brand name of their product. They're claiming that they're doing all of these studies, and I'm quoting here, this is actually from one of, it's a public company, this is from one of the recent SEC disclosures. The studies relate to various conditions, including diabetes, skin cancer, pulmonary hypertension, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, muscular dystrophy, coronary artery bypass, graft failure, renal failure. In other words, they go on to list a bunch of very specific diseases in which they're doing studies on whether or not their product, now this isn't like vitamin C or something, it's like their brand trademarked product. Is helping with these things. And they've got a couple of studies out where they actually claim that it has helped in the prevention or treatment of some of these diseases. This brings up a very interesting issue. If this were, let's say, something like just a regular nutrient, like vitamin C, I'll just use that as an example, and your company said, well, I'll give you a perfect example. There was a company a few years ago got a warning letter because they said on their product that vitamin C has been shown in studies to help reduce the incidence of heart attack and stroke. And several paragraphs later, it said our product contains megadoses of vitamin C. But they never said their product helps reduce the incidence of heart attack and stroke. Well, they got a warning letter. And the FDA said, look, you know, you're saying A equals B and B equals C, so you're saying A equals C. You're making a medical claim. You're saying your product helps reduce the incidence of heart attack and stroke because it has vitamin C in it. You said that's what vitamin C does. Well, if that's the case, then when you've got a substance that's your specific brand name substance, and you're citing studies that were performed about your actual product, and it has all these disease treatment benefits, does that help you legally allow you to make those claims, or does that make it even worse? In other words, there's no question that you're saying these disease treatment benefits are being attributed to your brand product. So I don't mention names of companies. I don't tattle on companies when I inquire with contacts I have at the FDA, which I do, which I'll talk about a little bit more later in another situation. But I do have an inquiry in about this. But it is interesting because, in my personal opinion, is I don't think that you can make medical claims about a dietary supplement under any circumstances. I don't care what they are, and essentially they appear to be doing it. So if they do a study and they said our study shows this is helping to treat cancer or something, you're making that claim about your dietary supplement. I mean, there's all kinds of evidence, all kinds of warning letters. There's tons of precedent that if you got a product that says has a substance in it, and you say go to PubMed and look up the studies on this substance, because these studies will say it has all these disease treatment benefits and our product has that substance in it, you'll get a warning letter. I got here, in fact, here's an old warning letter for a company called Sportron. This was from several years ago. But I'm going to quote from it here. Both your websites also contain links to studies on diabetes. These links constitute implied claims that your product is intended for the use in the cure, mitigation, treatment, or prevention of diabetes, a disease. So, again, they got some substance here that they said is in their product. They linked to some things online that said this substance can help with diabetes. They're saying, well, then your product can treat diabetes. I don't know how LifeVantage is not doing the same thing with publishing the results of these studies, which, by the way, are very limited studies on small numbers of people. Not hardly, I think maybe one of them was double-blinded or placebo-controlled. They're not very strong, well-constructed studies, in my opinion, and I've seen a lot of these studies. Whether they're good or bad studies doesn't make any difference. I think we're going to have an issue there with them making these types of claims. We'll see how that pans out. But I also want to make another comment, too, because we're talking about studies, and I don't think this necessarily applies to LifeVantage. I'm off that subject now, just to make it clear. But whenever a company says that something is being studied at various, you know, universities or hospitals or whatever, just because it's being studied doesn't mean that's a good thing or the study said it worked. Okay, if they say the study is done and it got positive results it was a structure function claim of some kind, because that's what we're allowed to make, that's fine. But I'll give you a great example. Several years ago, and this, I guess it was many years ago, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, Legacy for Life, they have an immune egg product. And I had some questions about this product. This was one where they supposedly were training chicken antibodies to fight diseases in the human body. So they would inject these chickens with different human pathogens, and the chicken antibodies would learn to recognize them. So when you ate their eggs, these antibodies would go through your digestive system, and they would know how to attack all those human pathogens now, because they've been trained to do this. The first question I had was, when a chicken antibody enters the human body, why does it not see everything around it as foreign? Like, nothing around it should be what should be inside a chicken. So why wouldn't it, like, go and fight everything, including human antibodies? Secondly, why wouldn't human antibodies see chicken antibodies as a foreign thing? That's not supposed to be in this body. Why wouldn't they attack it, and thus even putting more stress on the human immune system? Those were logical questions that I had. They had no answers to them. I talked to the president of the company at the time, who, after this conversation I'm about to describe, resigned shortly after. I don't know if I had anything to do with it, but he did. And they said, we're going to put me in touch with their lead doctor, this woman who was their big spokesperson at the time. Of course, she never did call me back, as she was supposed to. At one point, she did email me and said that injected chicken antibodies would be considered foreign, but ingested antibodies would not. And my response back to her was, what difference does the route make in how the antibody got there? You got a chicken antibody in your intestines. Regardless of how it got there, the route it took to get to that spot, how does that make any difference as to what your body thinks of it in your body? Now, by the way, they couldn't answer any of these questions, but I've since spoken to the lead scientist at another company, not MLM, that sells a much allegedly more potent version of these immune egg kind of chicken antibody, IgY they call it, who answered all these questions, and perfectly logically. I won't get into all of it now, but there are answers to all of those questions. It's just funny how Legacy didn't have any of them for me. But the big problem that I had, though, was that the two studies they were citing, they kept saying it's being studied at Beth Israel Hospital, and it's being studied by the U.S. Army with very promising results. But the studies haven't been concluded yet or haven't been analyzed. Well, actually, they had, and I found the studies. You weren't supposed to actually go find the studies. Well, I actually found the studies. They really were studies. And the studies were concluded, and closed, and they said it didn't work. In fact, one of the studies was on cholesterol, and I asked the member, the president of the company, and again, he's gone now, so I don't throw him under the bus, but I mean, not gone completely from the world. I mean, gone from that company. So, you know, again, it was years ago, so I'm not going to bring him up. But, you know, I asked him, I said, I mean, it says it didn't work. So why are you still promoting the fact that, you know, the U.S. Army did this study? And he said, well, we're not doctors, Len. We don't really know how to analyze and interpret that data. And I said, wait a minute. A cholesterol is measured by a number. Okay, and all these people, it was, you know, 120 or whatever it was. They did the study, they took the product, and when the study was all done, it was a number higher than 120. I don't need to be a doctor to know that means the cholesterol went up, it didn't go down. Okay, it failed the test. Not only that, but they say very specifically all, what was the actual words here? Oh, it showed no significant difference, that's quoting, in immunological factors. In other words, as far as immune capability, they didn't show any difference. That's just English language. So anyway, it failed the study. But for years after that, as I recall, I don't know if they're still doing it, they were still saying it's being studied at Beth Israel Hospital and the U.S. Army, and you're supposed to just assume that that's a good thing and have it be credible. Whenever a company says something is being studied at, but they don't tell you the result of the study, find the study. A, verify the study is even real, because several other studies, by the way, couldn't even verify it even existed, and that's true for many companies I've checked out. And secondly, what was the result of the study? If they don't specifically tell you that, find out what it was, because oftentimes you'll find the study just said it didn't work. What's next here on the news section? I want to just go back a little bit. I know this is kind of old news. I'm going to revisit this a couple of times in this podcast for different reasons. But, you know, the whole Barry Menkow-USANA thing, which is, you know, went on early 07, kind of went on for about a year and a half, now completely resolved. It's all over, long over with. Hate to even bring it up again. Except some of you that followed that may recall a guy by the name of Joe Chirco, C-H-I-R-C-O, I think his last name is, lives here in Vegas. And he was a guy that supposedly was in USANA, and the way that he was presented by Menkow on his YouTube video is one of USANA's quote-unquote victims, was in it for over a year, completely got burned, and now he was going to sue them. Well, he never did sue them until about 2 or 3 weeks ago. 19 months later, Joe Chirco has finally sued USANA, but now it's kind of interesting why he would do this now. Let me give you a little background on Joe Chirco. I think you might find this interesting. Joe actually joined USANA in July 27th of 2007. He quit about 6 or 7 weeks later. Now, of course, on the YouTube video, it said he was introduced to USANA 9 months earlier. That's to make you think he was actually doing it for that long. It was a little semantic game that Barry Menkow likes to play. But no, he actually joined it July 27, 2007, quit about 6 or 7 weeks later. During that time, he voluntarily purchased $1,300 in product, which was about $780 more than he needed to purchase to qualify for the highest possible quota in the USANA comp plan. In other words, there's no economic comp plan related reason for why he would need to buy more than $780, about $1,300 worth. The following month, he chose to purchase another $300 and change in product, which was roughly about $200 more than he would have needed to keep his one center qualified. You know, no reason to qualify three at that point. All he would have to have done was about $100 to keep that one qualified, so ordered three times more than he needed to. Of the $1,600 total in product that he purchased, he returned about half of it for a 90% refund, got it right away, about $782, and the remainder, since he didn't return it, I would assume was sold or sampled, or most likely he consumed it. You know, otherwise, you know, why not return all of it? So he got value for that. In other words, he got the product and he kept it because he apparently wanted it. Now, Chirco never enrolled a single person. He refused to participate in any of his upline's training, and I know this from firsthand. I spoke to several people upline from him, including a sponsor. Chose not even to attend a USANA training event right here in Vegas in his own hometown. And then shortly after this, he was featured, after he quit, he was featured on Menkow's USANA attack video on YouTube as one of their quote-unquote victims. Now, keep in mind that the most you would have to have done to activate three centers and to stay qualified, even if you bought it all yourself, is $675 approximately. So his refund of $782, he got way more back in refund than he ever was required to purchase to qualify for anything. And the rest was all product that he chose to purchase for no other reason than he wanted it. It's the only possible reason he could have bought it for. So, and besides that, it's now 19 months later, he decides to finally sue USANA after a distributor lawsuit has already been filed based on almost identical accusations of them being a pyramid scheme, was dropped by the plaintiff. There was a derivative lawsuit against them, too, for the same reason, also dropped by the plaintiff. There was a shareholder lawsuit accusing USANA of being a pyramid, which a federal judge dismissed on summary. That means he said that the charges of them being a pyramid scheme weren't even, quote-unquote, plausible. Dismissed on summary means, essentially, I'm paraphrasing this, obviously, and putting it in layman's terms, but the judge says there is so little evidence of anything here, we're not even going to waste the court's time. You don't get to take this any further. It's ridiculous. It's just you're dismissing it on summary. It's just done. That's how that was dismissed. The SEC investigated them for 10 months, what they call a preliminary inquiry. And the threshold to find anything to raise it up to a formal investigation is very, very little. You can find just anything that's the least bit suspicious will upgrade from an informal inquiry to a full-on formal investigation. They found nothing. Completely nothing. Nothing to take action on at all. The NASDAQ investigated them after Minkow's claims on the exact same premise. Found nothing. Took no action whatsoever. Now, all of this is over now. Remember, three lawsuits, two dropped, one dismissed, all these investigations. Time and time and time again, USANA gets completely vindicated. Every accusation of them being a pyramid scheme is just completely thrown out. It's now 19 months later. And this guy who has literally zero damages, in for 6 or 7 weeks, got a refund way more than he would have had to have spent to qualify, suddenly files a lawsuit against USANA. There is no legitimate reason whatsoever for this lawsuit. So that only leaves one possible reason, an illegitimate one. So it will be interesting to find out what Mr. Chirko's real motives are behind this, and I would just be curious to know whether or not Mr. Minkow still has any connection to this, considering he part of their settlement was that he not say anything or post anything negative against them and not invest in their stock and all this kind of stuff. Why in the world would this lawsuit come back up again? It's going to be interesting to find out how that plays out. Oral sprays are back. There's a big oral spray kind of craze through the industry back in the late, mid-90s. Some of you may remember the Caremore spray vitamins. Now, the reason why I wasn't a big fan of Caremore's at the time, which has now gone and been absorbed by another company, is that they actually said in their advertisement, and they put this little bar graph out there, which I've noticed is almost copied verbatim by some of these more contemporary companies that are coming out with it now. I mean, NewAge has had a Biogevity product for a while. There's a company called Alive Max, which is interesting since there's already a company called Alive and already a company called Max. And now there's one called Alive Max, so that's probably a trademark attorney's drooling over that. CyberWise has a spray vitamin product out now. Here's the problem. First of all, not all these companies, but Caremore, for example, did this. CyberWise does it now. They have this bar graph where it says, okay, if it's a capsule, it's something like 60% absorbed. If it's an injection, like straight into the bloodstream, it's like 70% absorbed. I don't know if my numbers are exactly right, but you'll get the point. If it's a sublingual drop of liquid, like you put a drop of liquid on your tongue, it's 80% absorbed. If you spray it in your mouth, it's 90% absorbed. Well, first of all, 80 or 90% absorbed through the mouth to get into what? Your bloodstream. So if you take a needle and you jam it into your vein and you shoot it directly into your bloodstream, that's going to have less absorption into your bloodstream. Okay, so we're already got a problem right there. But let me think about this. Isn't it a spray only in that space between the sprayer and your mouth? Like once that spray hits the surface of the inside of your mouth, isn't it pretty much just as much a liquid as if you had dropped it there from a dropper? Now, if they come back and say, oh, no, there's something unique about the liquid inside of our sprayer, well, that's a different issue then. It's not absorbed more because of the spray mechanism. Okay, that's not what they're saying. Whereas if I take the top off that spritzer and I pour a drop of that into my mouth, that exact same liquid is going to be less absorbed than if it was a spray on the way to my mouth. I mean, this is the kind of stuff I wish people would like think through a little more and not just take this stuff on its surface. You know, I remember the old Caremore vitamin, they used to have this bar graph, a line graph, where they would show how you when you eat a meal 3 times a day, you would get these spike in nutrient levels, or if you took a vitamin twice a day, you would get these spike in nutrient levels. But with a spray, you could just spritz it in there every hour on the hour, and it showed these little U-shaped loops of your vitamin levels in your bloodstream. And I would notice how that little U-shaped loop would, at, say, 2:30, start to go up and then peak at 3 o'clock when you sprayed it in your mouth. Do you think maybe that chart was just made up out of thin air? How did your body know a half an hour before you sprayed to start anticipating those nutrient levels going up, and they start going up even before you spray, right? Imagine the U at 2:30 is the bottom of the U. At 3 o'clock, the next time you spray is the top. So it's already going up even before you spray. In other words, it had to have been made up. But did they think we're idiots? Like, people aren't going to look at that and go, well, apparently they sold millions of dollars of it, so I guess somebody was buying it. But the biggest problem I have is, and this gets kind of goofy, and I'm not saying I agree with this. I'm just the messenger here, all right? I'm not as much not a fan of the FDA as many people are in this business. I think they do get some things right, but and I'll rant on that on another day. But this one here, I think, is kind of screwy. Their definition of a dietary supplement is something that is ingested. Okay, you have to send it through your stomach and your intestines and through the digestive tract. That's where it's got to be. That's its intended form of application into your body. So if you take a spray and spray it into your mouth and you swish it around, you spray it into your tongue or whatever, and it's absorbed through the buccal membrane or sublingually under your tongue, and then you just indirectly subsequently swallow it, that would still, based on the FDA's definition of a dietary supplement, still not be a dietary supplement. A dietary supplement must be ingested, and even when it's in liquid form, it must be in a measurable form, like a dropper or something, and it must be intended for ingestion. So I thought, no, there is a company out there, and I'm not going to name them. They have another similar type of product because I'm still working on the possibility of getting some feedback from them. I don't want to go after a company unless I've given them every opportunity to respond to the stuff that I have, and I'm still in the process of doing that. I'll probably talk about them on the next show. But anyway, they claim, as I assume the spray vitamin companies would also claim, well, after you spray it, you swish it around and absorb through your mouth, you swallow it. So it goes to the digestive tract too. There is a specific warning letter to a company called Now, N-O-W. It's not an MLM company, but it's a melatonin product, and you put it in your under your tongue, and you absorb it, and then you swallow it, you know, afterwards. It's just sort of an indirect administration into your body. And they got a warning letter from the FDA saying, look, even if it's incidentally swallowed, its intended use, as you're promoting it, is to be absorbed, you know, through the mouth lining and under the tongue. It's not a dietary supplement. And if it's not a dietary supplement, you're not protected by DSHEA, the 1994 Act. Which means you can't even make structure function claims. You can't make any claims. So this other company has come back to me, and they said, well, you do swallow it afterwards, so it does go through the digestive system. So I said, I'm not going to leave any doubt. So I contacted this guy. Now, this is someone who is the chairman of the section of the FDA in Washington, not a regional office, who is the very entity at the FDA that decides who gets warning letters, essentially. This is someone I can contact from time to time. And again, like I said, I never mention companies. I don't even mention the nature of their products. I don't want to tell on anybody or get crosshairs on somebody. You know, I don't want to be responsible for that. That's not my job. But I did ask him. I said, if a company said that a product that was through the sublingually absorbed or through the buccal membrane, the corner, you know, the surface, the sides of your mouth, was incidentally swallowed afterwards, and because it indirectly goes to the digestive system, subsequent to oral absorption, that would still cause them to be a dietary supplement. Would you agree with that? And he came back and said, and I am quoting, the attached letter sets forth FDA's position that a product intended for oral absorption falls outside of the definition of a dietary supplement. The fact that some might be incidentally swallowed after the fact would not change our conclusion that such a product is not a dietary supplement. And the attached letter that they sent me was the same warning letter that I sent to this company to say, look, here's what the FDA is saying. You guys, I still think, might have something you should check out here. So the FDA sent me the same warning letter as an example, where it was very clear in that incidental ingestion doesn't save you. If its intended use is to be absorbed anywhere inside the mouth, or transdermal, by the way, that's why all the diet patch companies in MLM have been put out of business. If it's absorbed through the skin, that's not considered a dietary supplement. So how these spray vitamin companies, now one thing I will say is that CyberWise, for example, is sort of like understood that's why you do it, but nowhere on their website do they specifically say it's absorbed through the oral, you know, membrane or under the tongue or anything like that. They're very clear to not say that. So they've got it right, and it is just a marketing thing, by the way. All these companies, all they got to do is just change the way they market it. Spray it in your mouth, put it under your tongue, put it between your cheek and gum, whatever, and then swallow it, and, you know, it's a convenient way to take your product. They don't really have to change anything other than just the way they're presenting it. But like I said, I will comment more on a couple of other companies I'm looking at that are doing those types of things once I kind of get their response to it. And I really, because any time that I have an investigation like this, I always want them to vet everything that I'm going to report. If I actually write up a report that's negative on a company, an expose or something, I always send it to the company first to say, hey, look, you know, what did I get wrong here? Most of the time they participate, sometimes they don't. Several years ago, and again, I hesitate to bring this up because they've changed a lot of things and they've reformed a lot, and I'm within this, well, most of it doesn't apply today. But back in 2002, so many, many years ago, I did a very negative, about 18-page report on Prepaid Legal. I had criticisms of several things about them, not the least of which was the quality of their legal care that I was getting at that time. Now, I've since found out they've done a lot of things to improve that since then, but back then, from 1995, when I was first a member just to use their service, was never a distributor for that company. I used their service three times, and the first time it was actually to help me write my book, Inside Network Marketing. So I asked for a literary attorney, and they sent me one, and the literary attorney said that I need to talk to an attorney. I'm summarizing, obviously, that's pretty much how it ended. The attorney said I should talk to an attorney. The second time was when I sued the Learning Annex because I taught a computer class for them. They owed me $2,000 that didn't pay me. I sued them and won. I need to file a judgment in New York where their corporate office was. It was a simple paperwork type of procedure. They sent me an attorney who then charged me $250 to cover his expenses, which was not supposed to be part of the deal. And he said, court system's very slow in New York. It'll take about 6 months to file this judgment, and then you can go get your money. And, well, it must be slow because it's been 14 years now. I'm still waiting for him to file that judgment. Learning Annex, of course, has since filed bankruptcy, and their name has been purchased in bankruptcy court. So the last time I used a prepaid legal attorney was for a very amicable, non-contested divorce and didn't involve any children, didn't involve any distribution of assets with a woman who is still my friend to this day. And we just wanted some paperwork done. That's all it was. So they connected us up with a guy, Bailey. That's what he went by. Not F. Lee. Long way from F. Lee. Just some guy named Bailey. He, in Fresno there, retired 72-year-old guy. Kind of reminded me of the old Billy Goat's Gruff cartoon character. But good guy, but unfortunately he was, I think he was suffering from onset senility, and I'm not kidding. He was having us sign where it said date. He was putting amounts where it said signature. He was asking us how to fill out the form. And by the time this process was over, I remember one time my ex-wife and I kind of joking whether or not I was going to end up divorcing her or legally adopting her. It wasn't for sure. But I also found out, too, he said that our divorce was final the moment she was served with the paperwork. And I said, how does she have to be served? She goes, you just have to hand it to her and she has to touch it. And the paperwork were sitting right on his desk, and my wife and I, ex-wife and I, were sitting right next to each other at the time. And I remember both of us kind of looking down at the paper, looking up at each other, then grabbing for the paperwork at the same time, and then like each of us kind of smearing it all over her body. We had a great time with that. Anyway, so we thought, okay, then we found out that no, it's 1 year from the time that she's served. So we were actually married for longer than we thought we were, while we were both dating and probably breaking at least one law and a couple of commandments. And as it turned out, by sheer coincidence, our divorce ended at midnight New Year's Eve. Sheer coincidence. So I remember as the ball's dropping on TV, watching Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve, we're like ready to pop the champagne, counting down the year and also our marriage at the exact same time. I'm not sure which one we were toasting more. But then we went on again to go on and date and go on with our lives, only to find out that's not how you serve someone divorce papers, and the whole time we were still legally married. So that was the last time I ever used a prepaid legal attorney. But again, many years ago, I'm sure they fixed that. But had other issues with their compensation plan and so forth. So again, I sent this to prepaid legal and said, you guys, vet this for me. What did I get wrong? I know not a lot of my opinion you're going to like, but the stuff that I presented here that's factual, that's verifiable, what did I get wrong? And they did get back to me and they said, well, you were quoted at thestreet.com, which wrote a negative article about them too, and if you will write something to say that you were misquoted by them, we'll vet your article about us. And I wrote them back and I said, I don't know why I should need to negotiate for your right to defend yourself against my article. Either you want to or you don't. And they refused to do it. In fact, I tried a lot. I tried various different people at corporate. I tried someone I knew that was very close to corporate, a tools company. And I said, you know, the owner of that company said, can, you know, you got a lot of connections there. Can you get them to vet this? He said, I'll try. And they couldn't do it. So then I published it. And a few days later, I got a letter from their attorney saying that my report was grossly misleading and full of errors. So, of course, I wrote them back and said, anytime you guys want to tell me what's wrong with this thing, I'll be glad to fix it. And never heard from them again. It's all obsolete information now, so I took it down years ago. But it's just the point. I do try to check this stuff out before I report it in most cases. And sometimes they want to defend themselves, and sometimes they want to ignore me, so then I report it, and then they make all the threats, which is what I suspect is going to happen with these other companies, but at least I'm going to give them a chance. Speaking of CyberWise, before we take a break here and get to the rant zone, which is my favorite part of the show, and some upcoming interesting guests I want to tell you about that I'm going to have coming onto the show, CyberWise has got an interesting situation going on where they've suspended three of their top four earning distributors and terminated the fourth. Now this is interesting because I heard to the MLM grapevine that they had terminated four. You know, the MLM grapevine works. It's like bad news gets worse each step through the grapevine and good news gets better. So I figured I'm going to contact them directly and ask them. I asked them this and a bunch of other questions, and they said, no, we'd only suspended two of the top four earning distributors. Well, I've since interviewed all four of those distributors and found out that one is most definitely terminated and was terminated before CyberWise's response to me. The other one did acknowledge he was suspended, still is. The other two said, well, we're locked out of our back office and our checks are being held, and they have been for weeks, but the company is saying they're not suspended. What exactly is their definition of suspension? In other words, it's kind of like, okay, you pulled me over, took me out of my car, you put me in handcuffs, put me in the back of your squad car, you took me to the police station, you booked me, you took my fingerprints, you threw me in jail, you locked the door, and I've been sitting there for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, but I'm not arrested. So, I mean, what else has to happen? You know, you can't recruit, you don't get a check, you can't enter your back. I mean, what else has to happen for you to be suspended? So, yeah, they've suspended three, they've terminated one, and I'm still trying to figure out why. Allegedly, they're all still trying to figure out why. I would tend to believe them, because if CyberWise was saying why, I think they would have made that public, since everything else is public. Their attorneys are going back and forth trying to find out why. There was an allegation they were looking at another company. That's why you get suspended, because someone accuses you of looking at another company. That's not a very good reason for a suspension. Which, of course, they all deny. And if you're the number one distributor in a company with 70,000 distributors underneath you making a very large income, I would at least call the person up personally and say, hey, are you looking at another company, before I would just suspend them and stop their check. But that's just me. So it'd be interesting to see what happens with the CyberWise situation. I'm still investigating. Like I said, I've got more questions going back and forth. I don't want to comment on a lot of it yet, because a lot of it's still happening at this moment. So I'll keep you posted about what's been going on with that. But I'll tell you right now, the way this is going, if you suspend or terminate your top four distributors in the company, you're basically shutting down your company, in my opinion. I mean, how do you survive that? How could anyone ever trust that company again? You know, you just don't do that without some kind of very obvious and verifiable and powerful reason. I mean, you've got to allow your distributors and your other leaders to make sense of the action, to have them understand why it took place and that it was valid, and not just leave it up to their imagination. I've heard that there have been some private, kind of, you know, behind closed doors meeting with some of the remaining leadership, you know, to explain to them what's going on, but then they, again, allegedly had to sign non-disclosures. So that information can't get assimilated out into the field. It's still left to the imagination of the vast majority of distributors out there. And not only that, but when you terminate top distributors, they eventually find another home someplace else. And a lot of their people will follow them, whether they try to make them follow them or not. That's just where they go. So you take a massive hit. There is a lot more investigation to be done here. It seems like the more I dig, the more layers I find. It's like the more answers I get, the more questions I have. Both sides are telling very, very different versions of the story. I've spoken to all four of the top four distributors that were suspended or terminated, and I've also been in communication with someone from CyberWise Corporate as well, too. And it's one of those situations where, you know, in some points you can kind of take each side's version of events, and if you grab onto them, you know, like really hard, you pull with all your might into the center, you can get them to connect up. And then there are some other points where they're just so far apart that somebody's just not telling the truth. So I think ultimately it's going to come down, because, like I said, there's a lot of aspects here and a lot of things that I'm still learning. The latest round of questions I just sent CyberWise, they had just responded back right before I'm recording this. So ultimately, I think it's going to come down to getting somebody from the distributor contingent here to come on the show and tell their version of the story, and getting somebody from CyberWise Corporate to come on, perhaps the person I'm speaking with here at Corporate, and just say, hey, look, you know, you tell us your side of the story. Now, from the distributor side, someone's already agreed to do that. So I'm going to make that invitation to CyberWise Corporate, and maybe we can do that on the very next show, because I think it really serves the situation better for it have them to just come on and just hear it straight from the source rather than me have to interpret all of this. But I will just say, to be very open about this, in the Jury situation, you know, we spoke about in the previous podcast, I was definitely leaning towards Corporate in that, as far as the two different versions of stories, still am, actually. In this particular situation, I'm heavily leaning towards the distributor side. So that's where I'm going with this right now. Their version just seems to make a lot more sense, and there's just some things that don't make any sense on the Corporate side. So, but we'll give them a chance, and they'll say what they want to say, and then, you know, if they don't want to come on the show, then you'll hear from just somebody from the distributor side. But we'll get to the bottom of it sooner or later, because I think it is kind of an interesting case, you know, when a company with that many distributors terminates or suspends the top four earning distributors. There's something going on there, I think, that deserves some investigation. So I will continue along with it and keep you posted. And one last thing before I go into break, I want to pose a question to you. If you all can get back to me on this with your email me, please, to either mwave1@cox.net or to site feedback. You can do that on my website. But however you do it, let me know why there seems to be so little interest in this Base 105 program I've been pitching. I mean, this is something where it's a guaranteed hundreds of dollars of tax savings. I can't imagine. I mean, I'm a single guy. I'm saving between $600 and $1,100 a year. A family of five has got to save thousands. You know, this is where you can take every medical-related expense and deduct it from what FICA taxes apply to. If you're a couple, you don't even need to set up a S-Corp or an LLC, nothing. It's simple bookkeeping. It's easy to set up. Pay them $150 a year to administer it, so you don't really do anything. It's so simple and it's so lucrative. It's probably the biggest tax break you could ever get by starting a business. Yet, I noticed in the last alert I sent out and after the email, about 350 people clicked through on that, which is a surprisingly small percentage of the total database I'm sending that to. So that was kind of surprising right there. But even of the 350 people that clicked through, according to Base 105, not a single person signed up. Now, by the way, if any of you did go to that link on my website or call them and sign up for this program, let me know, because that means there's something wrong with their tracking system. But they claim no one has signed up for this, not a single person. So what's the fear? What's the apprehension? What is it that you don't get that would cause you to not sign up for something like this that's this easy and is so assured to save you so many hundreds of dollars? What is it about it that's causing you to not want to be interested in that or not pursue it? Because I want to address that, because I think this is something the industry is oblivious to it, and I don't understand why. I don't understand what I'm missing. I've used it for 5 years now. It's an incredible program. And by the way, I'm not pitching this to make money. They don't have a formal affiliate program. You got to just remember to tell them that MarketWave sent you. You know, I'll make $25. Yeah, so it's and I expect most people probably won't remember who sent them, or you'll tell your group about it, and they'll all say you sent them, right? So I'm not gonna make any money out of this. It's just a great deal. I want to know why people are ignoring it even when they're made aware of it. So anyway, give me some feedback on that. Let me know. We're gonna take a break, and I'm gonna like cram a bunch of rants in, because I got some really great stuff that's really pissing me off. I need to talk about, including the Better Business Bureau. I finished my analysis of all the complaints for the last 3 years by the Better Business Bureau, registered with the Better Business Bureau, and the grades that they've given for the top 100 network marketing companies. I'll give you the result of that before I end up publishing this online. Pro anti MLM zealots like Ann Sieg and Andrew Cass and guys like that. I got some rants and some things I want to say about them, especially Mr. Cass. You all think Ann Sieg is bad in the way she's promoting her business and all the negativity. Wait, do you see what this guy's got going on? And I also kind of want to give you take you to scam school, give you a couple of scam lessons. I'll tell you exactly how people do this. So if you figure, if you can see the inside information about how they promote some of the easiest and biggest scams out there, maybe you'll, at a lesser chance, you'll fall victim to it. Little recap of MLM ignorance, you know, all the companies and out there that kind of slam the industry because they don't really understand us. We got some good news on that front too. Some people that really do are getting it right, saying some cool things about us. And a Fox News report on YTB travel and the letter that I sent them about how they presented that. You think, well, wait a minute, why would I send them a complaint letter? Because I don't like YTB travel either, as you all know. And they kind of bashed them. And, well, I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you what the result was. It's going to be very interesting. Then we'll wrap this up. So, again, hang in there for a couple of minutes. We'll be back after these messages, and we'll get on with the rant zone.
If you've ever had the opportunity to sit down one-on-one for an hour with a top leader in your company, you know how incredibly valuable that was. You probably look back on that as the turning point in your career. Now, what if you could do that with dozens of experts and the top leaders from the very best companies in all of direct sales? That's what you get with the Mastermind Sessions. How much? $1 a week. Only $52 a year, that's all. Well, one more thing. When you read something or watch a DVD, even a YouTube video, you've got to stop everything and just do that. But with an audio, you can be driving to the bank, doing the dishes, working out on the Stairmaster, or deleting unwanted emails, and you're learning. You're turning wasted time into productive time, growing your business by growing yourself. Get your subscription at www.themastermindsessions.com.
When I was first introduced to network marketing, I was pretty skeptical. Of course, the company tells you the product and the opportunity are amazing. I asked my upline, is there anything generic out there that tells me how this business is really done? That shows me that this is a legitimate profession where you can truly build incredible income and a lifestyle most people only dream of? That's when I heard about Networking Times. It's a generic educational journal for professional networkers that features story after story of people who have made it big in the profession. They share their secrets of how they got started, the challenges they had to overcome, and how they created a life of prosperity and contribution. If you're looking for generic network marketing training, visit networkingtimes.com. You'll find the best prospecting and training tools on the market and free weekly webinars with some of the best trainers in the profession. Networking Times is a one-stop shop for everything you need to build a thriving home business. Check it out, networkingtimes.com, committed to moving the heart of business.
Welcome back to the second half of Inside Network Marketing. Again, this is your host, Len Clements, and I know that we're actually almost coming up on the one-hour mark where I normally would try to end these podcasts until I finally got it through my thick skull that they're podcasts. So you can start and stop them all you want, listen to them whenever you want. So I'm going to stop trying to do that and just get all the information in I need to get in, which means this is probably going to go way more than an hour. So the Better Business Bureau. I've always been a fan of the Better Business Bureau. I've been a member of the Better Business Bureau in the past, companies that I've been involved in. My computer company in San Francisco is a member. I was, I guess, until I started to analyze their grading system, which was recently, really do some analysis of exactly what they do and how they do it, and not just take them at face value. Better Business Bureau, I mean, how could that be a bad thing? It's Better Business Bureau. Well, Here is why I'm not a big fan of the Better Business Bureau anymore. I've got a chart here in front of me, and this was a rather laborious task that I probably should have paid someone minimum wage to do, but I did it myself instead, of the top 100 network marketing companies and the total number of complaints filed against them with their respective Better Business Bureaus. And Better Business Bureau, by the way, tracks complaints going back 3 years. So they're all going to be for the last 36 months. Some of them might be for less than that, if they've been around for less than 3 years, obviously. But I did leave out startup companies. I think the, what do we got here? It looks like 17 months is the minimum number of months that any company is on this list. So they've all got to be at least about a year and a half old. Almost all of them, by the way, a good 90% of them are 3 years old or older. So these are the top 100 companies. Their Better Business Bureau grade that they give them, you know, A through F, and the total number of complaints, the total number of complaints that were confirmed resolved positively. That means the customer said, yes, I'm completely happy with this resolution. And then there was also, I did a little, my own little proprietary kind of formula here to create a resolution percent, you know, kind of a rating system, kind of like a quarterback rating system, if some of you know what that is. So I gave 2 points to that. I gave 1 point if it was resolved to the satisfaction of the Better Business Bureau, but the customer just didn't confirm it was resolved. But the company did what they were supposed to do. And so they got some points for that. Then minus 1 point if the Better Business Bureau closed it with the customer unhappy, but felt that, you know, the company did at least a minimum of what they should have done, the customer still wasn't happy. Then the minus 2 points if the company just ignored the complaint and didn't do anything. Then I take all of that, divide it into the total number of complaints to figure out a resolution percentage, because the number of complaints per month on average, which range from 0 to about 8.5, that's the worst, which I'll get into the details here in a minute, that's really not the most important thing. To me, it's more how they handle the complaints. I would much rather see a company get 30 complaints and have 30 of them confirmed positively resolved than have 3 complaints and they ignore all 3 of them and take no action at all. You know, completely unresolved. So how they resolve the complaints, I also think, is a good gauge of a company as well, too. So here's the interesting thing. Now, this isn't so much about knocking these particular companies as it is knocking the Better Business Bureau's rating system. So I'm not ready to throw a bunch of companies under the bus here, although I will say my motivation for doing this study was that this goes back to YTB Travel. I don't hate to keep picking on them because I think they deserve it, but if you haven't heard my past podcasts, I believe this company is legally suspect in the way that they've designed it. I don't think they intentionally designed it that way, but for whatever reason, that's the way they are now, and they're trying to defend it, and the California State Attorney General has called them a gigantic pyramid scheme, and they supposedly came up with a settlement. Their stock popped 15% that day, and then California came out and said, no, we haven't settled yet, and that was a few weeks ago. About 24 hours later, after they let some insiders and leadership and stuff like that know that there was supposedly a pending settlement, they put out what they call an 8K, I think they call it, where you announce to Wall Street, essentially, all the investors, that there's a pending settlement. So somebody got a 24-hour head start on that, and the stock popped 15%, only to find out that there really wasn't a settlement yet. And California said there won't be unless they significantly change the way they do business in California. And here it is, 3 or 4 weeks later, there's still no settlement. Be interesting to see how the SEC views that, as well as the Attorney General. But again, it's not about YTB Travel, as it more is their claim that their large number of complaints that were filed against them at the Better Business Bureau, which is 103 total complaints, was par for the course. Now, that didn't come from corporate, by the way. That came from some leadership in the field. I saw some blogs and things like that. They were saying, oh, we're a large, growing company with thousands of distributors, you know, over 100,000. That's par for the course. You're always going to get a large number of complaints like that. So they try to rationalize it like it's just business as usual. No, it's not. 103 complaints is a huge number of complaints for any network marketing company. I don't care how big you are. For example, Amway, in the last 3 years, has had a total of one complaint. Amway, the largest network marketing company on earth, has had one complaint, positively resolved, by the way, in the last 3 years. So no, that's not par for the course. It's a very unusually high number. It's not even close to the highest, though. The top 10 worst companies as far as number of complaints per month, we'll start with number 10, ACN. The last 3 years, they've had 78 complaints, 38 positively resolved confirmed. So that's 2.17 complaints per month and a percentage resolution of 67.9%. Now, just to put this in perspective for those of you who are not stats nuts like I am, for the entire 100 list, 0.66 complaints a month is the average. So figure anything more than 0.66 complaints per month, which is what, 2 complaints every 3 months. Anything worse than that is bad. Anything good than that is better than average. The percent resolution, the average is 60.7%. Call it 61%. If it's better than 61%, you're better than average. If it's below 61%, it has nothing to do with the number of complaints, but the care you're taking and the number of people you're making happy in your attempts to resolve those complaints would be below average if it's below 61%. So here we go. ACN, 78 complaints, that's 2.17, so way more than 0.66. 67.9%, so I'll call it 68%. So a lot of complaints, but a better than average resolution percentage. So actually, maybe not that bad. Avon, number 9, 87 complaints, 2.4 month, 96.6% resolution. They take care of their complaints. Herbalife, at number 8, 90 complaints, 2.5 a month, that's 70% resolution, better than average. Then we get to YTB Travel, 103 complaints, 50% resolution. So much higher than average, lower than average as far as how they take care of them. Surprisingly, and this one kind of stunned me actually, number 6 on the list, I think YTB, I might have said 6, that's 7, Arbonne was number 6. 116 complaints, but 84% resolution. So actually that's a very good percentage. So again, Arbonne, like Avon, they take care of their complaints. Number 5, Prime America. 136 complaints, 72% resolution rating. So again, a lot of complaints, but they take care of them. Number 4, Ameriplan, 215 complaints. Now notice the jump there, 136 to 215. Big jump, 58.4% resolved, below average slightly. So that one's not good. Number 3, Global Travel, 216 complaints, more than twice as much as YTB Travel, and an 85.6% resolution rate. So a lot of complaints, but at least they do take care of them. Number 2, Prepaid Legal, 250 complaints, resolution percentage 40.7, about 2/3 of the average. Not good, right? At least you would think. Well, hang on. Number 1, Melaleuca, 307 complaints. That's 8.5 complaints a month for the last 3 years. Higher than average, 72.6% resolution rate, but still, that's a lot of complaints. So you would think, based on everything that you just heard, that these companies would all have very low grades, or at least the ones that had a lot of complaints and low resolution rates, they would have low grades, right? Ameriplan, in fact, got an F. 215 complaints, 58% resolution, well, it looks like they deserved it. But what about Prepay Legal? They had 250 complaints and about a 41% resolution rate. Well, how do you get lower than an F? So I guess the worst they could be is an F, right? But they got an A plus. Melaleuca, the all-time record holder, at least since I've started keeping these, at least for the last 3 years, 307 complaints. Okay, 8.5 complaints a month. A D, maybe, if they resolved a lot of them? No, A. At least they didn't give them a plus. But they got an A. YDB Travel, by the way, did get an F. But wait a minute. 103 complaints, 50% resolved. Ameriplan, 215 complaints, 58% resolved. Ameriplan has twice as many, but they're both Fs. But Prime America and Arbonne, 136, 116 complaints respectively, they both got A's. A plus, A minus. I mean, something is really wrong with this picture. Well, let's jump down to the end of the list, which would be basically the top end of the list. These are the companies that had zero complaints. I'm just going to run through them really quick. This is no complaints at all for the last 3 years. Jafra, Biomedics, Forever Living, Four More, Legacy for Life, Life Plus, New Ways, Noivair, OxyFresh, Simplexity, Sizzle, Synergy, Unicity, Vitamark, Viva America, Accelerate, AIM, First Fitness, and Golden Pride, which is actually Raleigh. None of those companies had any complaints, so surely they've all got to be A's, right? No complaints. How could you be anything but an A? New Ways gets an F. An F with no complaints. Biomedics has a B minus. Zero complaints. For what possible reason would they not be an A plus? When not a single person has even filed a complaint against you. Here's the reason. You essentially pay for a high grade with a Better Business Bureau. If you become a Better Business Bureau member, you actually pay for a membership, you can practically assure yourself a high grade, no matter how many complaints are against you, no matter what happens with those complaints. Of those 10 worst companies that I just mentioned with the highest number of complaints, 8 of them are members of the Better Business Bureau. The 2 that are not, Ameriplan and YDB Travel, are the 2 Fs. The other 8 that are members are all A's, all the way down to Herbalife gets a B+. So it's interesting, of the bottom 20 of this list, and they're in order of most complaints to least, so the 20 companies at the bottom with 0 complaints, only 3 of them are members of the Better Business Bureau. And yet the one that isn't is got an F, even with no complaints. Of all the ones in the middle, by the way, 9 out of 24 are members, you know, about 38%. So there's typically your average. Now, it's interesting, though, the ones with the most complaints, 80% of them are members, so it's almost like they know we're going to get a low grade, so we've got to pay for our membership so we can get an A, even though we're getting tons of complaints against us. The ones at the bottom aren't members because they don't need to, because they figure, like, we've got no complaints against us. Why would we not get a good grade? Ah, well, guess again. It's almost kind of like, I'm not saying this, obviously, because it's just my opinion, and I don't want to get in trouble with the Better Business Bureau and tell them that I'm, you know, libeling them or slandering them or something, but it appears to me, so I've learned because of the Barry Mankow USANA thing, at least in California, as long as I say something is my opinion based on how it appears, you can pretty much say anything you want about anybody. I could call you I could put up a website and say you're a child molesting terrorist. And at least based on the California court system, if I say that's how you appear to me, it's my opinion that you're that, I'm allowed to do that, apparently. But anyway, I digress. You know, they're like saying, look, no matter what you do, no matter how good you respond to these complaints, no matter how many complaints against you, okay, if you want to get a good grade with us, you better be a member. And if you're a member, we'll protect you and make sure you always get A's and B+. So when you're not a member, you become companies like, for example, Coastal Vacations. Coastal Vacations has had 6 complaints against them. Of course, they ignored all 6 of them, so maybe they deserve their F. But again, only 6 complaints. But then you get companies like Ideal Health, right? The aforementioned Ideal Health. 3 complaints in the last 3 years, they got an F. But they're not a member of the Better Business Bureau. Fruitivida, 2 complaints in the last 3 years. Both of them resolved, by the way. Got an F. Not a member of the Better Business Bureau. Although they might get a few more complaints now from the network marketers that they just abandoned by dumping their MLM program and going to a more direct sales affiliate program. So they probably shouldn't even be on this list anymore. Max, 1 complaint, and they got an F. And like I said, New Ways, 0 complaints, they got an F. Anyway, like I said, I'll publish this whole thing online here. I'm about ready to go up to Utah to visit a consulting client. I'll be back Thursday night, so probably Friday or this weekend. I'll post it so you can see all the results. But basically what you're going to see is the Better Business Bureau's rating system is full of crap. It's completely worthless. It's a joke. And it should be completely scrapped and thrown out because it means absolutely nothing. All right, enough of that. Pro anti-MLM zealots. That's what I'm calling people like Ann C. Now, I got a lot of requests, actually, to rant on her and what she's doing. And I got to tell you, she's not the worst one out there. I'll get to him in a minute. But she's the one that's got this thing called the 7 Great Lies of Network Marketing. And she's the one that created these Google ads where no matter what company you Google, you get these things that say, you know, blank warning, exclamation point. So you Google, you know, Monavie, it says Monavie warning. You Google Herbalife, it says Herbalife warning. You know, Google Agile, let's say Agile warning. Whatever company you plug in, if it's an MLM company, you get these Google ads that are going to warn you about that company. Okay, even if you Google MLM or just network marketing, you get all these types of really negative ads implying that this thing is a scam and it's full of lies. And of course, you click on them, and it's just her selling her system. And she's actually in an MLM company, and she's very pro-MLM, but it's, you wouldn't know it by all of her stuff that she puts out there. Actually, you know what? Just to be fair, I would have invited her to come on this show, but she's already been invited on other shows, and she's always declined, so I don't know why she'd make any difference with me. You know, she doesn't need to defend herself. She's making a lot of money doing this, I guess, and she doesn't really care how much it hurts anybody else as long as she makes money. You know what? I'm not knocking her system. I've read her report. I've seen her system. I've heard other people say good things about it. It's not, had nothing to do with the merits of her system. I've heard bad things about it too. But again, that's not even my point. It's how she's marketing it. It's the selfish, self-serving way that she's marketing it. It's the way that she's basically throwing all of us under the bus to get more attention to her system, because she knows that people that see these types of things will click on it, and then, you know, it's basically, it's a bait and switch. They're getting you to believe that she's going to expose these big lies about MLM, and basically she's pitching an MLM deal, ultimately, is what it's going to come down to, or a support system for an MLM deal. She's not anti-MLM, but by doing this, it hurts the entire industry, because we suffer this guilt by association already. When the media already is screwing up enough stuff and associating us with pyramid schemes and Ponzi schemes and things like that, media is already doing that enough as it is. We have these actual anti-MLM zealots out there corrupting everybody's thinking and putting out all this propaganda that makes us look bad based on garbage that has no merit and is easily disproved, but nonetheless they're prolific and it's all over the place. Do we really need people inside our own industry helping them do that? Helping to magnify this guilt by association, helping to exacerbate this negative stigma that we have, which is completely unwarranted and unjust, but making it even worse and contributing to it. So again, it's not about the merits of her system, but her marketing system is unconscionable. It's selfish, it's destructive, it's self-serving, and it's wrong. I have no way that I could ever possibly support this, and it is my opinion that everybody out there should boycott it on principle and completely ignore anything that she does, because if you stop buying this stuff, she'll stop doing it because she'll have no choice. First of all, she won't have the funds to pay for it anymore. There are people who have done this many times in this industry before, too, and there are a lot of other people doing it that are copying it now, too. A friend of mine, Dale Calvert, tried this many years ago. He put out a cassette tape back before there were CDs. That's how many years ago it was. The title of the tape was MLM is a Scam. Now, of course, he was the top distributor for a network marketing company at the time, but, you know, him and I, we had some friendly debates about this, and I said, look, Dale, you know, when people see that, either they're going to be pro-MLM and see that and think, okay, well, here's a very credible person, Dale Calvert, who's about to tell me it's a scam. They won't listen to it. They'll just say, wow, he's going to tell me this is a scam. People who already think it's a scam won't listen to it because it'll just validate their existing position. People that have no opinion who see it, their immediate impression will be, oh, it's a scam. Well, then why would I want to listen to it? So eventually he put a question mark at the end of it. I don't think that helped. And then he stopped doing it completely. And to my knowledge, he's never done it since in many, many years. So, and good for him. It was the right thing to do. It was the right call. But now we got Ann Sieg doing it, and she's making money in it. So now we got all these copycats. Again, I'm not going to use any more last names, because if you know who these guys are, then you know who they are. If they don't, they'll just be names and they'll mean nothing to you. But Gary, you know, Gary, you know who you are, right? Yeah, he's a guy out there that emails me once in a while. He said, don't be an MLM victim. 2! I got a letter here by Larry, we'll call him. Title of his article is Network Marketing and the 5 Deadly Lies That a Lot of People Believe. And his leading sentence here is, network marketing, as we all know if you're in it right now, has some credibility problems with many people who are asked to take a look at it. Well, maybe, Larry, that's because people are writing articles and sending them all over the internet called Network Marketing and the 5 Deadly Lies. By the way, this guy, of course, is a network marketing distributor. So, it's not just Ann Sieg herself. It's all the copycats. It's all the people that can see that she's had success with this method, so we're all going to use it too. That's why right now, if you Google MLM or multi-level marketing or network marketing terms like that, look over in the column and you see things like I failed with, then whatever the name of the company is you put in, or MLM. I quit, then the name of the company, or blank. A big caution. Top earner left, fill in the blank. Or failing at MLM. And the one that, failing at MLM, which implies, to anyone who Googled it that, we all just fail at this business. Well, that one goes to Leaders Club, which is the one Ann Sieg is in. Now, or you'll see one a lot that says fed up with MLM. Well, that one goes to a guy by the name of Andrew Cass, C-A-S-S, and his coffee house letter, he calls it. But where you'll most likely see him out there is that big red obnoxious banner that you see in practically anything you go to now that's MLM related online that says crushing blow to MLM ! That's this guy Andrew Cass. Well, Andrew is a guy who sends out, I signed up for his little free e-zine, and this is the kind of utter crap that he's been sending out to everyone. I'm going to give you some examples here. These are all snippets, by the way, of emails that he has sent to his list that you've signed that can sign up for between April 4th and April 24th of last month. Keep that in mind. This is all within just the last few weeks. The one I just received like 2 weeks ago says, "Another major blow has been delivered to the MLM industry. This one reported in the Wall Street Journal by the Fraud Discovery Institute. This report is absolutely devastating. I have included the full report for you below. Here is just the opening paragraph." I'm still quoting here. "The Fraud Discovery Institute, under the direction of Barry Minkow, has issued a report on public company USANA Health Sciences, Inc., alerting authorities to possible fraud and also raising questions about the legitimacy of the entire MLM industry." He goes on to say, this is the third company that has come under a full-scale investigation. Where do I begin? First of all, as most of you who have been following me and my writing and even the past podcasts know, that he's talking about something that occurred about 2 years ago that has long since been resolved. The Wall Street Journal reported on it again about 2 years ago, and for a few months, you know, I started, I think, March of 07, they reported on it through about pretty much the end of the year, until, like I said earlier, the SEC took a look at USANA based on Minkow's allegation, found absolutely nothing wrong. NASDAQ investigated them, three lawsuits against them, two of them dropped by the plaintiff, and then one dismissed on summary by the judge because he said the accusations weren't even plausible. And then USANA and Minkow settle, and Minkow agrees to take down all of his anti-USANA propaganda and hasn't said a word from him since, at least that we know of. This is what he's reporting as another major blow delivered to the MLM industry, and the Wall Street Journal is reporting all of this, and this is going to question the legitimacy of the entire MLM industry. He just reported this like 2 weeks ago. Andrew Cass. He is taking something completely out of context, and he's basically BSing us with it. He goes on to say, this is the third company that has come under full-scale investigation. Now, I'm thinking, wait a minute. First of all, the first time I saw this, I thought, you know, why doesn't he just say that the Federal Trade Commission has just started an investigation of Amway? And if they succeed in taking Amway down as an illegal pyramid scheme, it'll destroy the entire network marketing industry. I mean, who cares that it took place in 1975 and was resolved in Amway's favor in 1979? Apparently, he doesn't give a crap about timing or, you know, history or how long ago it was. Who cares if it was 2 years ago or 20 years ago? Apparently, it doesn't make any difference to Mr. Cass, so why not use that as an example? Of course, as I was thinking this, I was being facetious to myself, and then I read this paragraph I'm reading now. This is the third company that has come under full-scale investigation. First, it was Amway, then Free Life, and now USANA. Now, first of all, Amway came under investigation in the UK, which they also were victorious and are still in business there now. That was resolved in their favor. It was close, but it was resolved in their favor. And this would have been after Mr. Cass reported this. So he can't possibly be talking about that. He's got to be actually talking about the FTC case. It's the only other full-scale investigation that there's really ever been of Amway. And then Free Life, and now USANA. A television show in Canada did an investigation of Free Life like 2 years ago. And it wasn't even about Free Life. I mean, Free Life was barely even mentioned in the show. It was almost entirely focused on a particular spokesperson they had back then. That could be all he's talking about. All large, well-known companies, the ones, you know, he just mentioned, and there are way, all capitals, more to come. Right? All of this is junk that he has made up. Or it's referring to things, like I said, that's long since been resolved. And he's assuming, I guess, who's ever reading this is an ignorant, you know, newcomer to the industry. But again, I kind of keep saying this, people get offended. Ignorant means ignorant. It means lack of information. Doesn't mean you're dumb or stupid. Or he thinks you're dumb or stupid. That's all he can be doing here, you know, with this type of information. He must think that people reading this have never heard a word about MLM before in their life, which obviously wouldn't have been his audience. Or he thinks you're an idiot. He goes on to say, this is a very disturbing and very dangerous direction the industry is heading. Yeah, it is. With people like him and Ann Sieg and all these people out there throwing crap like this out there and hoping people fall for it, yeah, that is a very dangerous direction. That one, I agree with him. I'm continuing to quote here. Some of this news may or may not be true. Yeah, no S. Yeah, Andrew. Some of this may or may not be true, but it does not matter because the public is already skeptical about this industry and is and always has been. Yeah, and again, that's probably because of the crap like the stuff you're putting out there. He goes on to say, perception is reality. In other words, he's almost tipping his hand here. He's telling you the game he's playing, the little mind game he's playing with you. Isn't that, that's exactly what he's doing. He doesn't know he's doing it. He's basically saying, here's the tricks people use out there, and perception is reality. So you're supposed to believe all of this stuff is like all these pending doom with the MLM industry. Because, by the way, I should have said this up front. Ultimately, of course, he's pitching a company that he claims isn't MLM, which is multi-level, and I'll get to that in a minute. That's the even greater irony of all of this. But, you know, so he's trying to bash the MLM industry to tell you there's an alternative to it. You know, you got to do his way. It's what's so ironic here is that there are multiple levels of irony of so many things that he's saying. I got a lot more to go here. The entire MLM business model, he says, is now under review by United States Congress, and there is a very real chance it could be banned altogether, authorities say. There is no review by United States Congress of network marketing. It's not. Maybe he's talking about the FTC rule, which is, of course, MLM was completely exempt from it, and that was like a year ago. He can't possibly be talking about that. He must know the United States Congress is not reviewing the network marketing industry. What authorities are claiming it's about to be banned altogether? Who are these authorities? He goes, this is their intention, United States Congress, and it's already been banned in multiple countries. For him to say that, I would assume he would have to know of more than one country where it's been banned. Now, it's been banned in China, because China basically didn't like the rampant pyramid schemes that were overtaking their company, so they threw the baby out with the bathwater. But what other country has banned multi-level marketing? Not a single one. But it's been banned, according to Andrew Kassin, multiple other countries. He has to know that isn't true. However, once I had the facts, he says, that you have now, he went on to make this, you know, big giant income in this non-MLM direct marketing type of business. I'm quoting again. As you know, being an entrepreneur is tough enough as it is in these days without having to constantly fight Congress or the United States government month in and month out. Are we constantly fighting the United States government and Congress month in and month out? What was our fight with Congress and the United States government last month? Or this month? Or how about, I don't know, February? When was the we haven't had a fight with the United States Congress as an industry unless you count Amway. You know, the FTC rule change certainly wasn't going to ban the industry or anything. You can't be talking about that. There's nothing to this. He's making junk up out of thin air. 18 times more money, he claims you can make with his type of business, through a very simple and ethical turnkey automated direct sales, not MLM in parentheses, business model. But the marketing method I would not consider ethical. But the key point there is, notice a very simple turnkey automated system. Keep that in mind. The irony of that will be coming up in a minute. Then he goes on, and this is an April 22nd email, just recently. In fact, both Donald Trump and Robert Kiyosaki recommend the network marketing industry in their latest book, Why We Want to Be Rich. That's the title of the book. In fact, in another section of the email, he says, in fact, in Trump and Kiyosaki's book, Why We Want to Be Rich, they dedicate an entire chapter to it. He's got entire all capitalized. It's chapter 25, by the way. This is the only business model they wrote a whole, all capitals, chapter on. Note, all capitals, exclamation point, not MLM in quotes, though. Not MLM, though. They did not mention MLM even once in their book. There is a major, major difference between true network marketing and MLM that most people will never know. In another email, he worded that a little bit different way. Trump and Kiyosaki both say that if they had to do it all over again, they would build their fortunes in this industry. Oh, and I almost forgot. Warren Buffett also bought a half dozen or so network marketing companies in the last few years. No, he didn't. He bought one. He bought Pampered Chef. In an April 8th email, again, he rewords it. They did not, all capitals, say they would get into multi-level, in quotes, marketing, MLM. No, they said they would get into network marketing. And well, they didn't say they'd get into it. They said they endorsed network marketing and they recommended network marketing. And network marketing is synonymous for multi-level marketing. So he's technically true. They didn't say MLM. They didn't use those three letters. They used network marketing. They're still talking about the same industry. By the way, of course, Trump and Kiyosaki both never said that if they could do it all over again, they would get involved in network marketing. That's an urban legend. But they go, although Robert Kiyosaki does endorse the business model, he and Trump would not get into it. This is Andrew Kass talking now. He and Trump would not get into it. They would get into network marketing, direct sales. Big difference, as opposed to multi-level marketing. Again, they're synonymous. But here's what he says in parenthesis. Could you see Donald Trump building a Wonder Vitamin business? Please. He would have said this after it was announced publicly and all over the industry that Donald Trump was going to start the Trump Network around customized vitamins. This guy is either totally ignorant of the industry he claims to be bashing here and once was so successful in the past, or he knows exactly what he's doing and he's hoping you are. He goes, it's important that you read between the lines and cut through the hype. I agree, Andrew. That's exactly what we're doing right now. Because get the facts on the inside. Your friend on the inside, Andrew J. Kass. Well, I'm on the inside, Andrew, and I am giving him the facts. I'm not done yet. April 2nd email. PR Web and I recently got together to release an exclusive and what many experts are calling a breakthrough press release on the information you were recently presented with in the coffee house letter on the disastrous state of the MLM industry. Yes, disastrous. Now, first of all, PR Web and I recently got together, like he's in some kind of partnership with them. He goes on to say, PR Web is the number one rated press release and newswire service in the world, and they distribute their press release to the top search engines and all the top newspapers in the world. He didn't get together with PR Web any more than my computer business in San Francisco, which was called PC Time back in the 80s. It's like saying when I put an ad in the Yellow Pages that, you know, Pacific Bell, Yellow Pages, and I recently got together to promote my computer business. I mean, come on. He paid for a press release through PR Web. I mean, he words everything like the reader is some kind of blithering idiot. Then he goes on to say, you don't want to be on the wrong side of this information. If you're a home business owner or a serious entrepreneur, you'll want to read every word of this quote-unquote exclusive press release. It has gained national attention very quickly since its release. Look at the contradictions here. Okay, he just got together with the PR Web, which he then says is number one rated press release, all the top search engines, all the newspapers around the world. It's gained national attention, but it's exclusive. Just, you know, just you and a few select people are getting it. I mean, does he not know how foolish this is? I'm quoting again, at one time or another, all of our members here at Carbon Copy Pro, and I'm naming it because you can Google Andrew Kass and find out who I'm talking about. So, okay, used to be past tense in MLM, and we've all left for good. No, you didn't. You're in one right now. Technically, there's multiple levels of people marketing. You get paid distributors on multiple levels of people below you. It's an MLM company. I'll tell you what he's in a minute. He goes, here's why. Here's why they're all leaving. All you hear about is how great and life-changing the products are. Oh, God forbid we say good things about our products. We say how great our products are. I mean, what a mess our industry is, isn't it? Here's another one. This is all you hear about, he says. How amazing it is that a celebrity is endorsing it. That's all we hear about. Very few companies have celebrity endorsers, and it's just, anyway, it's all hyperbole and exaggeration, or like I said, completely made up crap. All you ever hear about is how incredible the compensation plan is. Again, we're complimenting our compensation system. We're saying how great it is. How is that a bad thing? And by the way, isn't that exactly what he's doing with almost everything he's pitching about his opportunity, which you'll see even more in a minute? He goes, and my favorite, there is nothing like this out there. He's got that in quotes. Yeah, right. Guess what? None of it matters. That's right. None of it. Unless there is a proven marketing system in place. Period. End of story. No, Andrew, it's not end of story. You're wrong. I'll tell you exactly what you need to be successful in this business. You need a great product of value that people will buy even if they're not going to be a distributor anymore. You need great management. And that also includes creating a great company culture. Those are the two things you have. There isn't one more important than the other any more than your brain's more important than your heart. those are what you need. Now, as far as you need a system, absolutely, you need some kind of system, but there are a variety of systems that work in this industry. There's a great way to, you should have a lot of different systems to choose from, depending on what's best for you and your means and people that you know and your personality and so forth. I'm not saying you don't need that, but it's kind of like a kidney. You know, you can have one that's only mediocre, you know, doesn't function 100% and still be very successful in this business. If you have a heart that's working at 50% capacity or a brain, you're going to be in trouble. And as far as the compensation plan, you could have a bad one and still succeed in this business. I would put that at the bottom of the list, the compensation plan. Why? Because you can play 10% down 50 levels and 500% of zero is zero. It's how much product you move through it that determines your income. You want a great example? Look at Amway. Okay, Amway has, in my opinion, one of the worst compensation plans in the industry. One of the weakest playing. It's an old school, kind of a breakaway plan. But that compensation plan, where you get paid on basically points that are half the wholesale volume, you get paid on half your volume. I mean, just that. But yet, notice, I'm talking about the largest, most successful company in history. I'm talking about the company, even besides their tools business, have produced some of the largest checks in MLM history. Why? Because they move millions and millions of dollars of sales volume through it. Granted, that's because they've got millions of people, and that might go more to their culture, but nonetheless, they move a lot of sales volume. So, Andrew, you need a great product, you need a great company culture and great management, you can have a mediocre comp plan and a mediocre system, and you can still be hugely successful. And I know that from 19 years of actual experience doing this business and analysis, which you've obviously not done. God, I could go on and on here. But here's the funny part. Remember that earlier about his like no-brainer, turnkey, automated system he's promoting here? Get this next line. This is right after following up, by the way, on his, you know, you need this proven marketing system that he's got. Making a list of your friends and family, buying leads, cold calling, and sending people to a corporate website is not marketing. It's called laziness! Exclamation point. All of that stuff that's a lot of hard work is laziness, but using his plug-in turnkey no-brainer system where you basically let the computer do all the work for you, that's what you should do. All this other work is laziness. Does he even like go back and reread the sentence that he just wrote? I mean, do you understand? This is like me saying, okay, forget everything that you've heard. I'm telling you right now that the grass is blue and the sky is green. If I were to tell you that, wouldn't you say, Len, you've lost your mind? You know, you've just said things that are obviously exactly the opposite of reality. So his no-brainer turnkey system, that he talks about how easy and simple it is what he's pitching. And then as soon as he talks about this list of things that involve a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of training, a lot of skill that you got to acquire, blah, 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 he's calling that laziness, and we're not supposed to get that that's absurd. I'll finish up here. I could... No, I don't want to. I got another whole page. I got to do this. Fast forward if you're not getting this. I'm having fun with it. One more page. He's talking about his top tier business model and all the benefits to it. Because it's not based on the efforts of Bob and Mary out in Idaho down on your sixth level. How is that a good thing? That it's not based on Bob and Mary on my sixth level out in Idaho. I'm earning money from their effort. That's a benefit to this industry. That's one of the good things about it, is a whole bunch of other people's efforts that we don't even know about, many levels down, we're earning residuals from that. That's our plus. That's our selling point. Somehow he's trying to twist this around to sound like this is a flaw in our industry, and the fact that their benefit is they don't have this. He goes on to say, but there's another problem they, quote unquote, didn't tell you. 99% of MLM distributors never build an organization past one level or two, and dropout rates are at an all-time record high. We ran the numbers, and this is a very accurate statistic. No, it isn't. That's BS. All right? I'm trying to keep this clean, but man, there's more descriptive words I could be using. First of all, 99% of distributors never build an organization. Just imagine the diamond-shaped organization. Most people are in the middle levels. People, you know, you have genealogy reports, you can see that. Just visualize it in your mind, and you can see that at least a quarter of those people have more than one or two levels. I mean, did he not even put any thought in this to it at all? Dropout rates are at an all-time high, record high. There are no records. All but a few publicly traded companies even reveal that information out of over 2,000 companies. We ran the numbers, and this is very accurate. No, it isn't. You made it up. It's a sobering thought when you realize that your livelihood in an MLM business model is completely dependent upon strangers you've never met. That's not a sobering thought. That makes me happy. Does that make you happy? A whole bunch of people you've never met, their efforts are making you money. How is he trying to spin this like this is a flaw in the MLM business model? Anyway, Carbon Copy Pro was built for this reason alone. And this is after his paragraph about how much is designed to make you more money than the typical MLM model. It's built for this reason alone. Shouldn't it have been built to sell a great product? No mention of a product here, by the way, anywhere. You know, I mean, no, you should be designing a great system to move a great product of value to an end user. And here's his PS. You must qualify to be part of a true top-tier direct sales business. We have a very rigid application process, and those we accept are immediately put in a position to make big money right away. Yeah, their qualification process is a $49 application fee. You've got to pay, it's called a funded proposal. You got to pay $49 for the right to be a prospect, for them to send you material and prospect you. And if you pay this $49 application fee, they'll send you all this material, and then that will pre-qualify you as a good prospect. And now you can see the rest of what they're actually pitching. The ultimate MLM company that they eventually lead you to is called Wealth Masters. And Wealth Masters is one of these companies that's somewhat similar to companies like Delphin, Global Prosperity, Investors International. Remember some of these companies in the past. But these past companies, I'm talking about these other ones I just mentioned, these were companies where you pay several hundred dollars to eventually several thousand dollars for information, training courses and seminars, and ultimately it culminated in one for, you know, like many thousands of dollars in some exotic location for a three-day weekend or whatever. But it is, for the most part, information that, although valuable, it can be acquired through other means, and the majority of the funds that are paid are used simply to pay commissions to other people. Well, in the Wealth Masters plan, they have, like for example, their first tier is a $795 package, of which $300 is immediately paid in commission to the person that sells it, and then the company pays another $100 in downline overrides. Remember, supposedly, according to Mr. Cass, this is not multi-level. If I enroll Bob and I can get paid anything from those that Bob sells to, in other words, on my second level, that's multi-level. By every legal, logical definition, that's a multi-level marketing company. Their chart 2, they call it here, I'm looking at it online, for their M1 master program. Well, that's $1,995. I'm going to round up, call it $2,000. 1,000 of it gets paid instantly in commission, and 400 is paid in what they call infinity bonuses upline. Then they got the next one here for 9,000. Of which about 6,000 is paid out. Then they got another 9,000, 5,400 is paid out. Then they got a $13,000 program. And then the top one, called their Platinum Plus program, is $20,000. And that's where you get all this material. You get to go to weekend, some exotic location, whatever. But anyway, it's $20,000. The consultant commission is immediately $10,000, so half of it right off the top just gets paid in commission. Then another $2,400 is paid by the company in upline, you know, residual overrides. So we're talking about $12,400 of that $20,000 being paid for no other reason than to compensate people for selling it. But this is what ultimately Andrew Cass is pitching. You make more money in this, he says, than these little piddly $20 and $30 checks you get from network marketing distributors, because here, I mean, you can make $10,000 in one sale. Of course, what he forgets to tell you, you got to sell a $20,000 offshore seminar to get the $10,000. And in network marketing, even if he only made a few hundred dollars, he talks about these little measly few hundred dollar checks, but they go on forever. You know, you could just make a sale once and it keeps coming in over and over and over. Here, you got to keep finding more and more people to spend this money to keep this money flowing. They don't buy it and then ruse it up and then order it again next month. So I mean, I can go on and on. I mean, it's obvious common sense that what he's saying doesn't make any sense, and MLM has far greater advantages to this or whatever, and he's just twisting everything all around. But that's the greatest irony of this, is that ultimately this is what he's leading you through with all of that garbage that I was talking about before. He's bashing multi-level marketing way more than Ann Sieg, at least, is just her headlines are misleading and incriminating. This guy is just trashing us left and right based on completely bogus information, really tearing up the network marketing industry, and technically, he's in a multi-level marketing company. folks, I said there's really no overtime since it's a podcast, but I got to go shoot some video tomorrow. I got to save my voice, and I'm starting to lose it, and we're way over time. So I'm going to save the scam school stuff that I was going to talk about in the rest of the rant zone, the MLM ignorance section, for next time, and I'll get to one very quickly because I got a lot more stuff I want to talk about. Now I got a computer again, and I'm really going to try to commit to doing this next weekend and keep these coming out a little more often. So upcoming guests, there is a anti-USANA zealot that is anonymous online. He goes by the handle USANA Report, even though he pretty much trashes everything, but he's an anti-USANA zealot. But he is, I've heard anyway, I went online and found out that I made an offer to debate him on this podcast late last year, and he didn't accept, and now someone's just said, hey, then go check it out. Did you know that he eventually accepted? And sure enough, he did. So we'll follow up and see if he actually wants to do that. Of course, he'll back out. Howard Sirota, which is part of that whole Minkow thing. He's an attorney that hates MLM, and he's agreed to debate me too, but not much to debate there. He's kind of already exposed himself as being a propagandist, just trying to, short seller, trying to bash their stock, which is what I would have tried to expose, but might get that. That's the best I can do as far as debating anti-MLM zealots. Nobody else seems to want to take me on. But we got some good guys too. Richard Brook from OxyFresh is going to be coming on the show eventually. I can't really put him in the hot seat, the kitchen, because I don't know how to make his seat hot. He's a good guy, hasn't been doing anything wrong. So we may take an angle of, how does he, as the owner of a good, reputable company, compete with all the hype that's out there, who's not playing that game. That's kind of the angle we'll take with that. And also just recently got a confirmation from Randy Gage that he would like to come into the kitchen and talk about a little bit about what's going on with him, and he's given me permission to ask him some tough questions. We'll see what happens there. That should be fun. So that's what we got coming up in the future. I do got some interviews lined up. So again, keep checking in every week or two here at MarketWaveInc.com, and we'll be back again probably in a few days, maybe a week or so, with some more information and a lot more of the rant zone too. We'll double up on that probably next time. So I'll see you again here in a few days. Thanks for listening. Thanks for bearing with me for so long, and see y'all next time. Thanks a lot. Have a good day. Bye.